Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. We've got a wonderful show to cheer you up today. I know a lot of people, especially in New York City and the East Coast, are a little depressed, but don't fear. We're gonna give you some reasons to be hopeful and to be happy. So definitely cheer you up. And we've got a very special announcement today, but at the end of the show, so make sure you stick around. You're going to like this one. I know my listeners, you guys will love our special announcement today. So let's get started. I'll make sure we have enough time for our guest today with our quotes of the day from the universe and from Abraham. I know you've been waiting all week long. Let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. First, from the universe, it's always better to give too much, pay too much, and love too much than not enough. But then, since everything comes back to you anyway, how can there ever be too much? I love you too much anyway. The universe. We love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the universe. Kind of reminding us that, you know what? It's always better to err on the side of generosity. It's always better to, you know, give more than is necessary or than we used to, because it's all going to come back to us anyway. And not only that, but, you know, the act of giving, again, this is giving from a place of self-care and giving of a place where our cup is overflowing, not giving from our lack, not giving from what we don't have. But when we give of ourselves, when we've taken care of ourselves and done good stuff for us, you know, then the giving, it raises us up. It makes not just the world a better place, it makes us better. Okay, so that was the universe. Let's see what Abraham has in store for us today. From Abraham, there are always those who thrive when masses are dying of sickness. There are always those who thrive economically when economic decline seems to be the order of your nation. There are always those who are clear-minded in environments of confusion. You do not need everyone or anyone else to align with your desire. Only you need to align with your desire. Abraham. A wonderful quote from Abraham, and it's really sort of this one gets to the heart of this lesson of us manifesting and us creating that which we imagine, that which we desire. It's not really about anybody else. It's not about the economy. It's not about the environment. It's not about where you are. It's all about what we are personally aligning to. You know, when we align with our desires, when we align with those things that we really want in life, when we align with the vibration of what it is that we're seeking to create, it doesn't matter if everybody else in the country votes for the other candidate. All right. It doesn't matter that, you know, you just lost your job. When you align to the things that you're really looking for, our mind starts working differently. We start moving in the direction we need to move in. You start rallying the troops. People start getting resonating with your energy, with what you're emanating, and you create the movement of change that you're looking to seek. However, if you're focused on all those things you don't want, if you focus on everything that's wrong with the world, if you focus on everything that's wrong with the economy, then you're just feeding your brain with all the reasons why you can't succeed and why you can't make a change and why things can't be better. And so then you live into that belief. So it's only by focusing on the fact that it's not about circumstances, it's not about the economy, it's not about the environment, that then it's about what you're connecting with. Then it's about what you're generating. Now, look, does this mean that we can do everything alone? Absolutely not. Does this mean that it's not easier when things around us are more in alignment with what we want? Of course it's easier. Of course when we have support. Of course when things are moving in the direction we want to move in, it's always easier to overcome the inertia. It's always easier to go along. But we're not here because things are easy. We're here to create. We're here to make a difference. We're here to manifest things of our desires. And that's whether it's a positive desire or a negative desire. You know, the last show, Ori and Carrie and Kai, they kind of talked about a little bit, you know, our positive thoughts are just as powerful as negative thoughts. Or I should say negative thoughts are just as powerful as negative thoughts for the exact same reasons. So it's when we choose to focus on what is it that we're trying to create, what is the way the world we want to live in, what do we want, what does that world look like, that's when we are really in our state of empowerment and we're really moving forward in a way that serves the world instead of just disempowers us and makes us feel like we can't make a difference. We can always make a difference. And actually, we make a difference each and every day by how we show up in life. So I guarantee you, how you're showing up today, right now, regardless of whether you like what's happened in this country in the last week or you don't like it, how you are showing up affects the people around you, affects the world around you, and will affects, most importantly, you. So, two wonderful quotes from the universe and from Abraham, reminding us to it's never a bad thing to love too much. And when we're in alignment by loving too much, we can actually create miracles. So, two wonderful quotes. We'll have more for you next week. And now, as I flip around our camera on our Facebook live stream, let me introduce you to this handsome gentleman who's in studio with me today. And yes, of course, for those of you listening via talkingalternative.com, if you want to see the video, just go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/talkingalternative, and you should see the link there. If not, just go to my personal timeline, Sam Leibowitz in New York City. But it's my pleasure to welcome Joseph A. Bundy to the show today. Very different kind of guest for me. I don't think I've had a lawyer on my show for quite a while. And Joseph is a private criminal defense attorney, and he's located here in Manhattan, a graduate of Columbia and University and Brooklyn Law School. He's admitted to practice law in New York, in the district courts all over the place, and in Connecticut and the U.S. Court of Appeals for all kinds of circuits. Why do they call them circuits? I always wondered that.
Well, the appellate courts are divided into geographical ranges. So throughout the United States, you have 11 different circuits, and each one kind of comprises a different region in the country, Sam. That's why.
Okay.
And those are the intermediate federal appeals courts before you get to the Supreme Court.
Because it sounds like a computer to me when you say circuits. You know, you got this circuit and that circuit. Joseph is also a life member of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and the Legal Committee for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, most commonly known as NORML. And that's what we're going to kind of talk a little bit about today, aren't we, Joseph? All about sort of what's going on. There's some exciting things happening in what's going on in the cannabis industry, the marijuana laws across the country. But first, before we even get to that, I would just love to know what motivated you to become a lawyer in the first place?
Well, I grew up in New York City. I was born. I was publicly educated in New York City, Sam. I went, like you did, to the Bronx High School of Science.
Yes, big shout out to my fellow Bronx Science alum.
And I quite frankly, was motivated to go to law school because my mother gave me the ultimatum of needing to go to school, you know. And I
So it was either doctor or lawyer, huh?
But this was an expedient, you know. I knew very little about law when I made that decision.
Okay.
And for me at the time, it was like cops and robbers. I didn't understand the distinctions between an intellectual property lawyer, a tax lawyer. And so I agreed with my mother that I would apply to Brooklyn Law School. And indeed, I did that. And the only law school I applied to, I got in. And it was like I got in, you know, for a few weeks later, much to my concern.
You must have been so upset about that.
I didn't expect to go to school so quickly. You know, I'd applied in the summer. I was fishing in New Hampshire, and I relented and applied, and then I got in. But on the first day of law school, I met my wife in the very first class, and I was like struck in love. And so law school started out with really kind of a wonderful experience for me, and that's unfolded through the years.
Interesting. And so once you got out of school and started practicing, was there anything in particular that kind of drew you to be a criminal defense attorney? Because, you know, they normally have like pretty bad reputations.
Well, again, I was kind of a product of circumstance. First off, growing up in New York City, and particularly if you're in the public schools, you see a broad demographic of people.
Absolutely.
And you come to learn when you get older that, you know, for me, a white Jewish male, perhaps I get treated a little bit differently than other people do.
Right.
And I started to think about, you know, giving people a voice and being able to kind of protect people and be on the side of people. You know, government has a lot of resources, but a people's lawyer is a rare thing. And so I wanted to kind of have a voice for people that needed it.
I see. Very cool. So very altruistic of you, really trying to help people, which, I mean, I so much can relate because, you know, I'm a nice Jewish boy, grew up in the Bronx. I'm also a public, also a product of public schools for the most part, although I did go to private school for the first, you know, few years. And really like the diversity, and I so, this is one of the things I so appreciate New York was growing up with the diversity, you know, and even in high school, I mean, there were just every kind of ethnic background, every kind of person. I had no sense of prejudice because I was always surrounded by all different kinds of people. And the only prejudice I had was against assholes. You know, if someone was an asshole, I didn't want to have anything to do with them. But if you were cool, I don't care what color your skin was. I don't care what country you came from or your parents came from. If you were a good guy, that's what made the difference to me. And it's interesting now because as an adult now, when I go into different social circumstances, I'm around a group of people. If it's like all white people, I'm like, where's the color? You know, and if it's like, you know, if there's no diversity in the group, like sometimes I go to a business networking group and, you know, usually there's some diversity, but sometimes there's not. And I'm like, it just feels weird.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, cool. So time for us to take our first break. When we come back, I want to talk about sort of how you got involved with Normal, because we are going to spend a lot of time in this show talking about sort of the changes in the laws around cannabis, the recent elections and the voting. There's been some, you know, a lot of people see all the negative stuff, but there's been some actual good stuff that happened. And we're going to talk
quite a bit
all about that. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Joseph Bondi, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hello, I'm JC.
I'm Joan.
And welcome to 21st Century Entrepreneur. We bring education,
insight,
knowledge,
awareness,
trouble,
craziness, and fun
for you, the entrepreneur who's looking to build your business
and your community. Listen every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern on talkradio.nyc. And you can tweet us at 21st CE Radio or Talk Alternative.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we're talking especially for all my, actually a big shout out first of all to all the people listening through the Facebook live stream, Melanie, Lauren, Mark, and Steven. Thank you guys for tuning in. We definitely have a fun show for all of you with my guest Joseph Bondi. So Joseph, we talked about, can I call you Joe?
Yeah, no, call me Joe.
Call you Joe. Okay, good. So Joe, you got involved as a criminal defense lawyer, trying to protect people who hopefully were unjustly charged or were just having to deal with things and that needed representation. When did you started to take up the banner around people sort of dealing with drug charges, marijuana possession, things like that?
Well, a couple of things. First off, I became a criminal lawyer to help people, even those who were justly charged.
Ah, right? Okay.
Even people who were guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Even people who were correctly arrested.
Okay.
And my goal was to try to present, in all cases, the best of them, the human side, right? They're kind of their original nature, if you will, right? The person that they are in a positive light.
So really to give context.
And to make a difference in the outcome. You know, some people, judges have discretion at sentencing. Mm-hmm. Prosecutor has discretion in sentencing.
Mm.
People commit crimes oftentimes for reasons we can all kind of understand if we're honest about it. And so when I entered criminal law, it was to help all people.
Okay.
And it just so happened that when I entered criminal law in the 1990s, the mid-1990s,
mm-hmm.
pre-Proposition 420,
mm-hmm.
we were living in the legacy of Just Say No. We had ramped up our drug laws.
Mm-hmm.
We had federal sentencing guidelines that had been recently implemented that call for mandatory minimum sentencing.
Yeah, which is
we
nuts.
Had that 100-to-1 crack cocaine to powder cocaine disparity in terms of sentencing for drug quantities.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me that, you know, I mean, almost every case I had involved a narcotic case, and that was a function of me as a young lawyer in practice in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them were marijuana cases.
Okay.
And so, you know, when we think about cocaine or heroin or some of these harder drugs, and you compare them to cannabis, Right. I can make a pretty strong argument for marijuana's legalization,
right.
A stronger one certainly, right?
There's yeah.
not, to me, there's not much of one with these other harder drugs.
Right.
And along the way, I came to see the impact that our marijuana laws had upon people in the form of destroying families and in the form of a punishment that exceeded yeah. the crime. I can't help but say that for those of us who know, spending the night stoned for whatever these anti-legalization people say is a lot better for you than spending the night in jail.
Absolutely.
And, you know, again and again and again, I saw who these laws were affecting on a local, granular level in New York. They were not affecting a certain type of person from a certain demographic, a social economic group. They were affecting people who were stopped and frisked.
Right.
And then I couldn't help but see as I started to dial down and speak to these people and their families mm-hmm. in larger cases, trafficking cases, cases mm-hmm. where the law was broken,
mm-hmm.
that these were people who also deserved to have their stories told in a way that could make a difference and ameliorate their sentence to the extent mm-hmm. I could, given what then was like a really rigid grid work
right. Right.
and a kind of a sentencing scheme that had no way out for right. the average federal offender charged in a mandatory minimum case. That's changed since then.
Yes.
But that was the kind of my beginning, you know, the wellspring of ideas that led to me doing a lot more cannabis cases.
Right, right. And back then there was no such thing as legal medical marijuana, and there was no
when I first started practicing, there were a couple differences, principal differences. Mm-hmm. There was no medical marijuana program to speak of. You could point right. to maybe an Alaskan program from the 70s or the New York program that had never been implemented, but it wasn't really until 2006 when you had California's Proposition 420 right. that you began to have an acknowledgement of a medical marijuana movement and a wellspring of interest in passing laws in favor of medical marijuana use.
Mm.
So that was distinction one. We didn't really have that. And we also, in terms of federal sentencing under the, of people charged with violating the Controlled Substance Act, Schedule 1,
right.
we didn't really have a mechanism to go below the mandatory minimum. Now there's something called the safety valve. That's the vernacular.
Okay.
And that's a means for a first-time nonviolent offender who doesn't really lead their conspiracy to be given relief from the mandatory minimum. But even that didn't exist when I first started practicing.
Okay.
Rather, people in federal court, if they exceeded a certain threshold, 100 kilos of marijuana for a 5-year minimum or 1,000 kilos of marijuana for a 10-year mandatory minimum, were sentenced to at least that term, if not longer, and there was no escape. Recent years, we also have Attorney General Holder, who last year issued a memorandum, not binding, but a memorandum with respect to the application of mandatory minimum statutes to certain nonviolent drug offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, the Department of Justice policy, at least in writing, has shifted somewhat
mm-hmm.
so that the nominal average, I guess you'd say garden variety, no pun intended, marijuana cultivator or trafficker right. Will often not face a mandatory minimum sentence. Now, okay. jurisdictions differ, you know.
Right, right. So I'm curious, what got you involved in Normal when you kind of started off? Was it just the thinking that or seeing that it would have a better effect?
Well, in the mid-90s, we didn't really have the marijuana policy project. You didn't have the same kind of National Cannabis Industry Association, both groups I like and both groups I support, but you didn't have any of those types of industry groups. You didn't have an industry.
Right, right, right. Really, it was all illegal, so there's no legal industry around.
And so Normal was the group. That was the group founded by Keith Straub in I think, 1970, you know, a public yeah. interest lawyer who remains involved and committed. And
still around active?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
cool.
a really an excellent, excellent, excellent guy who's done great work. But that was the group.
Mm-hmm.
That was the place that I could find a group of lawyers who I respected as really top drawer colleagues and marijuana policy experts to talk about marijuana issues.
Right.
There was really the group.
Right, right, right. You know, I've heard drug use referred to as a victimless crime, in the past, right? Because it's really just an individual deciding to, like, you know, I want to go up and get high, and like, there's no victim in it. I'm choosing voluntarily to do it to myself. So why did these, you know, very stringent drug laws develop in this country over time?
Well, I mean, I could disagree with you about drug use as victimless crime, you know, and I know a number of people who've regretted selling heroin or regretted selling cocaine because they see the victims of the crime. You can victimize oneself.
Well, it's the use, not necessarily selling.
But you can victimize yourself. But, you know, kind of putting that aside, I think that the history of marijuana in America is one that is, you know, kind of disingenuous. We started out with marijuana as part of our pharmacopoeia. It was legal for a doctor to prescribe. There were cannabis treatments for asthma. There were cannabis tonics for sleeping. I think one of the second or third most popularly prescribed drugs at the end of the 19th century. And then as you enter the 20th century, you find prohibition, alcohol prohibition, the failure of prohibition, a certain segment of our government wanting to kind of shift into a different form of enforcement that many people say coincides with, and you can make the argument, certain crimes involving Mexican men on American women, and reefer or marijuana, as they called it, being attributed to the criminal activity.
Right.
You also saw a wellspring of creativity in the African American jazz community.
Yes,
and you saw the proliferation of reefer in the African American jazz community, and that was something that you know, formed a separate, if you will, spear for the prohibitionists to try to kind of for what many people say, and I can't say are not racist reasons.
Yes.
As time went on, and you saw this general kind of stance towards prohibition increasing, you then see prohibition being used to kind of, one could say, dampen the Cultural Revolution and to kind of address or counter support or dissension from the war in Vietnam. And that's, you know, puts us right at the time of Nixon.
Yeah.
You know, when President Nixon had essentially commissioned a task force to determine what to do with cannabis, and the task force came back and said, gee, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing. That, of course, was not listened to, and we engaged in an increasing policy of not only prohibition of marijuana, but of escalating penalization of use and possession and sale. And that culminates, of course, in Nancy Reagan and this Just Say No to Drugs,
just
right?
Say no,
and you look at the charts and you can see this, you know, enforcement really peaks in the 90s.
Then
you see enforcement beginning to go down, and now we've reached this bizarre crossroad, and indeed the bizarre crossroad that had been, we'd been driving towards it for a while, has now really come into a black and white intersection in light of our election last week.
Absolutely.
This past week.
So let's get into it since you bring it up. We just got a couple of minutes before break, but this past Tuesday, there were a bunch of states that had marijuana referendums. How many states now legalized it?
I think we're up to a total of 33 states that have a law on the books legalizing either medical use of marijuana or recreational use of marijuana or both.
So more than half of the country.
Much more than half of the country. We're like over two-thirds here.
Two-thirds.
And I'm putting aside, for purposes of our discussion, the states that have a CBD or a hemp oil law. If you take into account the states that allow somebody to now grow, process, possess CBDs and hemp, you're over 40 states, so we're over 80% when you take that figure into account. I exclude it for purposes of our discussion because I'm talking about the kind of cannabis that is psychoactive.
Right. Got it. Wow. So I didn't realize it was that many. How many, do you have a sense of how many new states?
We had eight. I mean, the full list is, you've got California in the lead.
Right.
Which is a state that contains 25% of our population. And they have now gone towards full-scale recreational legalization.
Yeah.
I note that some municipalities, even Berkeley, for example, have enacted moratoriums on implementing the recreational law until they determine what they want to do in their own cities. And indeed, they have the right to do that. I think San Jose has done the same thing.
Okay.
But that's a huge addition.
That is huge to our
marijuana legal states. And we have a few other marijuana legal states for, believe it or not, Montana, North Dakota, Florida, for medicinal purposes. Florida is a broad-ranging amendment. They become the first Deep South state to have this kind of a wide-scale medical marijuana program, much more wide-ranging than New York's Compassionate Care Act.
Yeah.
And
it
was really just an extraordinary turn of events.
Wow. So, I mean, really, you know, a lot of people may feel this past election, you know, that the conservatives really benefited or got a lot of their people elected and that agenda forward. But at the same time, it's kind of taking a more progressive stance towards marijuana has tremendously increased.
Well, here's the crash at the intersection is what happens now in light of our Republican presidency.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And we have to see how conservative this quote unquote Republican really will be, who was a Democrat up until a few years ago. So it'll be very curious to see what actually comes forth. Okay, so let us take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the implications of this and, you know, what do we see looking forward? Okay,
sure thing.
So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and my guest this hour is Joseph Bondi, a criminal defense attorney who's very active in the marijuana reforms going on right now. So everyone, please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of the Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on the Rob and Callie Show Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.myc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. We're talking this hour with Joseph Bondi all about marijuana laws. So this past election, we've now got over close to two-thirds of the states in the country have some kind of legalization of either medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. Yet still, federally, marijuana is a scheduled substance, which means it's illegal. So that for people, let's say there's kind of what they call the gold rush now in the cannabis industry. A lot of entrepreneurs have been to meetings here in New York City wanting to get involved, wanting to do things about it. But there's still some challenges around that because federally, it's still not so clear.
That's correct. And in fact, there's a lot of challenges in the field if you start to think about it. There are ways to look at the marijuana industry. And I start by saying when I became a member of Normal, there was no industry.
Yes.
I became a member of Normal to get people out of jail and prevent them from going to jail.
Right.
And to use the laws to try to effectuate that. I thought that was fair.
Right.
I had never really envisioned there would be a industry where people are entrepreneurs and there are thousands of people who are inventing products and running production companies and benefiting patients and, you know, benefiting themselves as well.
And there's all kinds of ancillary service providers as well. There are like now branding people and marketing people
and consulting people.
Consultants.
And
it's
people
all kinds
who sell the greenhouses and the lighting and everything else. There's people who sell cannabis insurance.
Cannabis insurance. Wow.
Cannabis insurance. But there, when you start to think about this on a global level, we have this big conundrum. We have international treaties. There are 194 countries who are signatories to international treaties, like the Single Convention Against Illicit Substances. These date back to like the 1970s. And they've been ratified and ratified and ratified again. And the upshot of our international treaty obligation is that we have to make drugs illegal and we have to have laws on our books. Then you get into these finer political questions, like maybe the Netherlands, as to whether you have to enforce those laws or it's just enough for them to be on the books and for you to abide by your treaty obligation. But as you can imagine, Sam, the United States led the cavalry towards these our participation in these treaties and towards making these drugs illegal. And for us to now backtread and be in violation of international law by nationally legalizing cannabis is not a position I think we could take. And indeed, last year, in I think it was April of 2016, earlier this year, I should say, the United Nations General Assembly of States had a meeting of the signatories to these treaties to discuss what might be done to modify some of these treaties in light of changing cultural opinions and changing times. I note that at the time of UNGAS 2016, Uruguay had already legalized cannabis for sale by the government and cannabis clubs and for growing by individuals. Jamaica had recently implemented a program allowing for the sale of cannabis for scientific or for medical purposes.
Man, I would have thought Jamaica would have led the charge on that one.
Jamaica's the interesting thing about Jamaica is, you know, they have so much cannabis potential. People think of it as this cannabis haven. Then you go to Jamaica, you try the cannabis, and you see there's so much to improve. But nonetheless, hopefully that'll change. But what Jamaica's done, interestingly, is kind of cross-honor American patient cards for people arriving from different states with medical cards. So UNGAS this year at the United Nations had a number of things to address in terms of changing cannabis laws and policy. And if you take a look on the UNGAS website, you'll find that there wasn't much achieved. There are a few clauses that have been inserted in the statements of commitment that would appear to allow states to begin, sovereign nation states, that is, to begin to think about crafting their own cannabis laws for limited reasons that are within conformity of our treaty obligations. But the thing that most people who talk about marijuana in the streets of New York today, who want to get into the industry, don't think about is, one, the implication of international law and how that might prevent there from being some kind of wholesale legalization, and two, how for most entrepreneurs, federal legalization is the death knell to their entrepreneurship. Because here's what happens. It's true.
Absolutely.
Once there's federal legalization somehow, you would imagine that these banking problems with large-scale national banks entering the cannabis space will be resolved.
Right.
Now you couldn't find a large bank to enter the space.
Right.
Once there's national legalization, you would expect the Patent and Trade Office to begin to actually grant patents for people's cannabis inventions, things they're not doing right now, and trademarks as well. I mean, we have a constitutional right to copyright protection, but you don't have it in the cannabis industry. You also don't have, for example, normal business deductions. But once you have federal legalization, you have large tobacco companies come to mind, Big Agro comes to mind, not so much Big Pharma, poised with distribution networks, poised with cultivation abilities, poised with scientific laboratories to enter into this space.
Right.
And to literally vaporize, maybe pun intended, all of these other people's profits.
Right.
And once you really follow legalization to its natural course, you think about a joint as a tea bag. You think about the cost being on par. You think about the market falling out. I mean, I read a stat the other day. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has calculated that it takes 4 cents per pound to transit cucumbers from the Mexican border 400 miles up into the country.
Wow.
The DEA says it takes $400 a pound to bring marijuana the same distance. Now, that's in the illicit market, but just by way of example, it's 1,000 times more expensive in that instance, to transit the marijuana.
Right.
Once you take into account in our current scheme security and the need to transport in a very protected manner,
mm-hmm.
and the still quasi-legality of the industry, there are a lot of add-ons. And even then, the price of marijuana per pound has fallen from, say, $5,000 a pound mm-hmm. for the best of all marijuana on the black market 10 years ago to under $2,000 a pound. And so you could imagine that market continuing to fall as all of these new cannabis mm-hmm. entrepreneurs are mm-hmm. leveraged in their investments, leveraged mm-hmm. in the monies they've taken in as loans, and in a very difficult position. The average cannabis industry person has to be careful of what they're kind of wishing for.
Right. Be careful what you wish for. You may just get it and be surprised. Though, you know, what you said before about kind of the banks not really being able to take in the money, I thought, well, you know, that's like a huge difficulty in being a cannabis entrepreneur. It's like, you can't deposit the cash anywhere. You need lots of safes and stuff. But now that like over 33 states have some kind of legal marijuana laws, I would think that the banks are going to start lobbying the government to legalize marijuana so that they can start taking it in, because they're going to see these huge potential deposits that they could have that they can't necessarily take or they can't take in a reasonable manner now, and that could actually push things in the next 5 years.
I agree completely.
For federal
lobbying by the banks, lobbying by big tobacco, for example.
Yeah.
But again, you have to address and answer the international
right
question.
But doesn't Europe usually
in the free, in the clear.
Isn't Europe usually ahead of us on these kinds of issues?
Here's the thing, Sam. Maybe, right?
Maybe.
But let's talk about 194 countries that have signed on. We've got countries in the Middle East that are not progressive on cannabis.
Yes.
African nations not progressive on cannabis.
Yes.
Asian nations not progressive on cannabis. China issued they went out of their way to issue a written report for UNGAS, supporting the continued implementation of our treaties and our obligations. And so maybe Europe is traditionally a little bit more relaxed in their attitudes towards cannabis, but not the lion's share of the people that we have to persuade. And so even if we were to, say, enact a federal law allowing states to be exempted from the Controlled Substance Act, saying you have a sufficiently strong and protected regulatory scheme and, you know, we're going to allow you to be exempt and sell cannabis, I think that kind of a federal law would even be questionable with respect to our treaty obligations. And so I keep, as I analyze this from a drug policy perspective and not such a granular in the street, you know, let's open a cannabis business perspective,
which many people
come to me and that's their state of mind.
Right.
I see that there are some larger looming problems. And perhaps where we are today, which is, and we haven't even gotten to the election, but if we were to be able to maintain a state-by-state decision-making system with states deciding based on the voice of the people, although not every state, and indeed New York is not, is a ballot referendum state. What we would be able to then do if we lived under the Cole Memorandum from the Justice Department in 2013 is to continue to operate state entities for purposes of medical and recreational marijuana sales, provided they abided by certain relatively simple, reasonable guidelines, not selling to children, not diverting into the black market, not engaging in tax evasion. They're relatively simple things that a person in any other industry would abide by. If we maintain that system, and that's a big if, that is dependent upon what happens with our new president, that may be the best way for people to be able to buy and sell cannabis.
So let me, since you've brought it up now, and I want to make sure we get to it this segment, I kind of feel like our president-elect is a little bit of an enigma, that we know some of the things he says he stands for. I don't really believe he stands for half the things he says he stands for. What's your feeling about him in terms of his positions just in general around cannabis and drugs and stuff?
I'm guardedly optimistic, and here's why. I have read quotes of Donald Trump's in the past indicating that he believes that medical marijuana helps people. And indeed that the medical marijuana, you know, at least the ability for people to receive it should remain. I'm not sure of the regime for implementation, but at least he appears to be behind medical marijuana.
Okay.
As he does with many things, he's referred to recreational marijuana in Colorado as a, quote, disaster. And so now this makes me wonder what happens with the recreational programs. Is there a rescission of that Cuomo memorandum as it relates to some of these businesses, the recreational schemes? Or, given the fact that reserving rights to the states and reducing the size of government seem to be squarely in the Republican wheelhouse, and this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, I feel that there's a substantial possibility that the current regime will be allowed to flourish.
Right. I mean, and there is the fact that, like, Colorado's has been able to do so much with all the tax money that they've gotten from the marijuana industry that's helped them tremendously. I'm sure the any state that has a recreational plan and is getting tax revenue from it are going to lobby heavy to kind of keep it.
I completely agree.
Very quick question before we go. Do you think this kind of attitude towards cannabis and legalizing cannabis, is this spilling over into the other psychoactive drugs? Because, you know, like I know we've talked a lot on the show sometimes.
I'm not sure. I mean, the notion that people think LSD should be legalized, I don't find that to be a more popular notion. Right. Ayahuasca, peyote, certain ritual, sacramental, psychoactive substances. I think there is a push towards allowing traditional native groups to be able to utilize those sacraments. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure about there being any kind of support for the broader population being allowed to use them.
Okay, great. All right, believe it or not, it's time for us to take our last commercial break, and we're going into our last segment. And everyone, you definitely want to stay tuned, because we've got a very exciting announcement that we're going to talk about next segment. So please stay with us. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with Joseph Bondi all about sort of the whole legalization aspect of marijuana and what's been going on with the medical marijuana and recreational marijuana use. And we have a very exciting announcement, don't we, Joe?
Yeah, we do.
We do. Starting tomorrow, is it?
At 11 a.m.
At 11 a.m. Gee, you know what tomorrow's date is?
420.
11-11.
11-11.
So on 11-11 at 11 a.m., we have the premiere of
In the Know 420.
In the Know 420, the newest show here on Talking Alternative. What's it all going to be about?
Well, In the Know 420 is the first brick in the Cannabis Broadcast Network, which is something that I've envisioned. I think the time is ripe for people who are talking about cannabis and on all levels of the debate to be able to kind of, you know, put their content up, speak about the issue. And for me, with my show, I wanted to bring a academic and also kind of like a real life experience blend of people to the show. And so I intend to have people who are attorneys in the field, who are doctors prescribing marijuana throughout the country, people who are entrepreneurs in the industry who are running some form of a business, people who have suffered federal mandatory minimum sentencing, former federal law enforcement agents, people who are now working in the cannabis industry, having worked in government. I want to bring everyone to bear and on a weekly basis kind of talk about the American cannabis revolution as it evolves, because every single solitary day you see something different. So I want both sides of the debate. I would like to have as many voices in the community, in that marketplace of ideas as we can have. I want to take on issues with all kinds of people from their perspective about full-scale legalization, what that may mean, limited legalization, cannabis as a medical, as a medicine. I want to speak to people about issues that, and we just had one at the break that was raised, that affect criminal justice reform, whether there is a mechanism or a means for expungement of a medical conviction. And so I have a slate of people scheduled. Tomorrow I'm going to have speaking with us David Holland, who for a number of years was general counsel at High Times Magazine. And David is a dear friend. He's an excellent attorney. He and I have tried federal cases before. And he is currently the executive director of New York State Normal. We work in New York on normal matters together as well.
Great.
But he and I are going to talk about the various state statutes, changes in law, and our outlook for the future. I'll have a public service announcement from a former law enforcement official who was convicted for selling a couple kilos of marijuana and lost his career. He will talk about how you must obey the law, and if you want to advocate and lobby for change, you should do that through proper channels. I'm looking forward to, as the season progresses, we're going to have Kareem Burke, who many people call Biggs. He's known for having founded Rockefeller Records with Jay-Z back in the day, and I came to know Biggs when he came to me as a client in a federal marijuana case. He's going to talk to us about the evils of federal mandatory minimum marijuana sentencing and life after serving a prison sentence for marijuana. He has a very successful denim line he's going to talk to us about. And in the same show, which is episode two, we're going to have a group of young people who I love. I'm smitten with them. They are the Cannabis Cultural Association, and I met them. They were co-sponsoring, I think, an NCIA, a National Cannabis Industry Association event in New York. They also co-sponsored a Elizabeth Krueger, Senator Krueger, discussion on her plan to tax and regulate cannabis. But the CCA will be here to talk about their mandate, which is to expand diversity of hiring in the cannabis industry. They also have an expungement project that they're working on. I'm helping them with that. And they're going to talk about their project. Their idea is to have low-level marijuana offenders in New York be eligible to have their convictions expunged after a certain period of time.
Oh, wow.
And then we're going to have a little Q&A between Biggs and the CCA about how they best can succeed in business.
So you're going to focus on sort of what's going on in the industry overall, kind of nationally, as well as dealing with local issues here in New York State.
Absolutely. We may have people from foreign countries who are involved in the cannabis programs of certain nations, talking about UNGAS, talking about international law.
I'm curious, are there similar kind of movements in other countries to really legalize cannabis and to kind of be more progressive as we're seeing here in the United States?
Well, Jamaica strikes me as one. You had for a number of years the Rastafarian community being marginalized and criminalized for their efforts at legalizing cannabis, and now you see in Jamaica a form of legalization that frees a lot of people to provide a lot of cannabis. Uruguay, you've got more of this state sponsored, almost socialized cannabis program, you know. But yes, Israel is a pretty good example of a state that has progressive views towards cannabis and an increasing movement towards scientific and medical research.
Has there been anything over your involvement with Normal in the, and sort of the cannabis industry and defending people that's really surprised you over the years?
The first surprise I had was when I went down to represent a woman in North Carolina in a mm-hmm. federal marijuana sentencing case, and I was a very young lawyer, and she is today a pretty well-known activist. She was facing time for having imported some kilos of marijuana from Switzerland. She distributed a lot of it to terminally ill people, and we're talking in the 1990s.
Okay.
And she was being sentenced in Raleigh, North Carolina. I got mm-hmm. down to meet her. I met my co-counsel. You know, I was sent by the Normal Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her, and the first thing that really blew my mind was that she reminded me of my mom. She could have been my mother. You know, she was just, she wasn't some outlying, fringe-dwelling, counterculturalist person. She was a loved member of her community. She was a person who provided an enormous amount of support and an enormous amount of love to the people all around her. Right. And that was my first kind of revelation.
Right.
I've had a couple others through the years. Some of them involve people who go to prison that maybe don't have to.
Right. Yeah. Right. Cool. So In the Know 420, it'll be on right. every Friday at 11 a.m. As you said, it's going to be sort of part of a broader effort, sort of the just initial or the linchpin, at least, to get this Cannabis News Network going.
That's right.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, I'm so thrilled, and we're all very excited here at Talking Alternative to have you join our network. I mean, this is exactly kind of the thing that we've built this network for, is to present alternative views on things that you may not necessarily see in the mainstream media. So
thank
welcome,
you.
And we hope you will enjoy your experience with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
My pleasure.
See
my
you
pleasure.
Tomorrow. Thank you.
See you tomorrow. So everybody, make sure you tune in tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on talkingalternative.com for the premiere of In the Know 420. Oh, before I forget, if people want to learn more about you, Joseph,
they can reach me either on my website, which is josephbondy.com, josephbondy.com. They could mm-hmm. look at federalmarijuanadefense.com as well, a site that I run, which I envisioned as a federal resource to help people who are in trouble.
Right.
But those are pretty good sources if you want
right.
to check
so you
out.
Can help people regardless of whether they're local here in New York City or across the nation if they're dealing with some kind of...
Yes, yes. And if you look at Federal Marijuana Defense, I have a directory mm-hmm. in every state of lawyers who are committed to helping people in cannabis cases, expert right. witnesses, all that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But yeah, I'm here to help anyone. Right. So yeah.
Just curious, if there are two states that have... marijuana laws and you transport cannabis across those state lines, do you get in trouble?
You get in trouble for now.
For yes. now. Okay. All right. Good to know.
Thank you, Sam.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joseph. Okay. So, everybody, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I know it was a real thrilling for us to kind of be able to deal with these leading edge topics and to bring something new and different. So we're really looking forward to this. Next week, I have on actually a wonderful woman, a crystal healer by the name of Krista Mitchell. We're going to be airing that show. We pre-recorded it, so it'll be airing live for the first time next Thursday, the 17th at 12 noon. And, you know, this is just the first announcement of some new shows. We have a couple of other possibilities that I have a really good feeling are going to come through. So I think you're going to start seeing a little bit of growth in the programming here at Talking Alternative. So I hope you will stay tuned for all of that. I also want to remind people that next Thursday evening, November 17th, is the third meeting of our Conscious Business Collective. You've heard me talk about it in the past. I actually even dedicated an entire show to talking about it. It still should be up on the archive page. So please make sure you go to talkingalternative.com and click on the Conscious Consultant Hour and take a listen to that if you haven't. It starts at 6:45 in the evening. And you can find out all about it at our meetup group, which is meetup.com/conscious-biz-collective, or just go to meetup.com and just do a search for Conscious Business Collective. You'll find out all about it. In addition to that, because I had such a wonderful response to the spoon bending workshop last month, we are having another one this month on the Monday before Thanksgiving. That's November 21st, I believe, right here at the Double Diamond Wellness Center. So if anyone's interested in that, please come and register. You will also find that on the Conscious Business Collective and our other meetup group, the New Earth Society. So either one of those. Or just sign up for our newsletter at talkingalternative.com and you know, scroll down. Don't like just ignore the newsletter. Scroll down, look at the events. The links will be right there for you to RSVP. So everybody, thank you for listening, and we shall talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hello, I'm JC.
I'm Joan.
And welcome to 21st Century Entrepreneur. We bring education,
insight,
knowledge,
awareness,
trouble,
craziness, and fun.
For you, the entrepreneur who's looking to build your business.
And your community. Listen every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern on talkradio.nyc. And you can tweet us at 21st CE Radio or Talk Alternative.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on talkingalternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff, like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place, because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.